they're A players. And I think that B players' performance suffers without guidance. And I think A players tend to do better if not interfered with. And that's really our aim here.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. And I've brought back a regular guest to our show, Clay Collins.
James, thanks for having me back.
Thanks for coming back. We've been chatting for years now. I can actually say years as we chart your stratospheric progress from living in a closet to funded company. I don't mean that literally. I just mean that you used to make little videos underneath the staircase and hustle a little bit for your marketing podcast, and you did a bit of software and at welcome gates and video players, and ended up into this lead thing that's blown up pretty big. And now it looks like Lead Pages is moving into some new space, and that's something I'd love to ask you about if you're willing to share today.
I'm all yours.
So what happened between the last time we chatted and now? It seems that you've acquired a business.
Yeah, you know, I like to use the term acquired partner, but I think the last thing this space needs is another jargony new term. But we technically acquired a company called Drip, but what I care about, you know, primarily is the partnership that we now have with a new group of people that's building out a new line of business for us.
And tell me about some of the decisions that come into this. From, you know, I'm really curious about it from a business perspective. What would cause you to partner or, you know, take over a business unit rather than develop it in-house?
You know, I think for us, it's about speed and also expertise. I think that there's some groups of people, you know, some people have more money than time and some people have more time than money. And we're in the camp that has more money than time. And I also think that we as a company have a particular bent. I have a particular bent as a product person. And, you know, there was an opportunity to partner with Drip, and that includes the two co-founders, Rob Walling and Derek. And Rob and Derek have a different set of, you know, backgrounds, proclivities. You know, they have a different approach to product. And that is a huge asset to bring to the table. You know, I think for most companies, the only way to add additional real founding DNA is to bring some more founders into the team. And we were able to do that with Rob and Derek. And it's been a rocket ship ever since when they, you know, when we acquired Drip, they had about 1,500 customers. Right now, we're adding about 1,500 customers per month to the platform. And we expect that to continue. And interestingly, getting into the numbers here, only 10% of those new customers that we're adding are Lead Pages customers. So it's not like we're just, you know, cross-selling them on another product. We're, you know, objectively, you know, creating a tide that's lifting all ships.
And was that your theory that you'd introduce new customers in?
It was, right. So, you know, I think we have a pretty good footprint in this market. We, you know, have a list of over 250,000 people, and we've got pretty good reach and rankings for different things. And certainly we thought that we could leverage that, but it wasn't simply a strategy of like, hey, we have product A to sell to our customers, and now we can just like upsell them into product B. That really, you know, that crossed our minds, and it seemed like that was one of the ways that we could long-term pay for the acquisition. But this was not simply an exercise in trying to increase the lifetime value of our customers through a simple cross-sell. This was much more strategic than that.
Right. I suppose when you take on a different business unit like this, you're going to have other decisions like whether to keep the name or to merge them under one umbrella or
yeah,
to upgrade the whole business like Google did with their Alphabet thing.
Right.
Were there some discussions around that?
Yeah. So we really believe in the unbundled marketing stack. We think there's a whole bunch of people trying to create monolithic marketing platforms and nobody likes any of them. Like, just think of any of the popular all-in-one marketing suites that have like a shopping cart with an email service provider, with an affiliate program, with a landing page tool, with analytics. And like, no matter what brand you name, like everyone probably hates most of them. And if they don't hate them, then the product is probably considered a lesser evil. And we think it's pretty poor product strategy to just be like, we're just going to keep on adding like more shit to this monolithic thing. And like, that's innovation. So we don't really think that's innovation. And we really like the nimbleness of, again, this unbundled marketing stack and allowing people to choose whatever they want. So Lead Pages is going to continue to aggressively integrate with Drip competitors, and Drip is going to aggressively continue to support and integrate with Lead Pages competitors. And if Drip earns the right to have Lead Pages customers use it, then that's fantastic. And if Lead Pages earns the right to have Drip customers use it, then that's fantastic. But we are a proponent of open over closed, and we are a proponent of allowing people to have choice.
Right. So what that means is that competitors to Lead Pages can still recommend Drip.
Absolutely. And competitors to Drip can, you know, can encourage their users to use Lead Pages, right? So it's open.
And the other thing that's great is the segmentation ability that you have, because I imagine when you're talking about your different silos or segments, you can put on your hat for that particular product when you're thinking about marketing funnels, advertising, audience segments. They're going to be different, and you're going to have a highly relevant segmented conversation with those users instead of a one-size-fits-all.
Yep.
I noticed that for things like Google apps, they've got a separate app for the Sheets versus Docs, and Drive. As a user, I love that they've split them out. In fact, I did the same thing with my own business units and sold off my website development business and my SEO business because they were standalone units and could be separated from the portfolio as their own individual, you know, traffic generating service fulfillment modules. So I think it's a great idea of yours to keep them separate.
Yeah, I think a lot of what larger platforms end up spending a lot of their time on is just coordination and synchronization across groups. You know, do these different products have the same UI? Oh, we upgraded our sort of, you know, buttons over here. Now we need to upgrade them over here. And we modified this part of the tech stack, and we need to, you know, make everything in alignment. And, you know, I'd rather have a series of sort of independent speedboats rapidly innovating and delivering new value to the market instead of this one big lumbering, you know, cruise liner that can only go so fast. And so I think the separateness allows each team to innovate separately, to move separately. And I think it creates more choice from the market. You can use Lead Pages without Drip. You can use Drip without Lead Pages. You can use Center without either of them or with both of them. And so it's just, I think it's better all around. And I think it allows for more innovation.
What was the most surprising thing for you in the process of taking over another business? Was there something that you thought would be one way and turned out to be completely the other way when you got further into it?
You know, I think at the end of the day, what I'm most blown away by is the quality of the Drip team. I knew they were incredible. I just didn't know how good they were. You know, the majority of the team has decided to move from California to Minneapolis. They seem to be having a great time. And I'm not really spending a lot of time in the day-to-day operations of Drip. In fact, I would say I'm spending almost no time other than around, you know, spinning up a marketing machine around that product while the two co-founders continue to do what they did best. So our aim was not to take over. It was simply to amplify what they were already doing right and then participate in the upside that would be generated as a result of that amplification and that partnership. So I feel like we just have more entrepreneurs in the building now. And the biggest surprise was just how good it is. I read a statistic somewhere that said that between like 75 and 80% of acquisitions end up failing. And that scared me to death, considering, you know, the real amount of money that was and is on the table around this acquisition. I'm just surprised at how well it's gone. And I think that speaks to the amount of time that we spent cultivating this deal. We spent over a year talking. I think it speaks to the alignment that Lead Pages and Drip have in terms of cultures. I think it speaks to the dedication that both parties have around the success of the deal and the combined success. And there's just something really beautiful and really special, and something that is just frankly like really touching to me around how all this came together. I think, you know, this partnership that has emerged is something that you know, I knew it made sense on paper. I knew it made sense for the market, and it's also making sense at sort of this level of integration. It's just a really, really satisfying thing. I guess the surprise is I just didn't know how satisfying this would end up being. And I'm just incredibly delighted by how it's turned out.
So I remember going through the merger of Chrysler and Daimler or Mercedes, and that was fascinating, but mostly because the guys at Chrysler on much bigger pay, and they were two different countries and different cultures. I imagine having been in the same country, and the fact that some of them are actually moving to the base there would have neutralized some of those threats. Do you find anything like pay disparities or you know, cultural differences that you have to smooth out?
Yeah, so you know, Drip was a scrappy bootstrap startup, and you know, they were at about 7 people plus 2 contractors. And, you know, there were some disparities and I won't speak to exactly what they were, but there were some disparities. And they were ones where I think at the end of the day, Drip employees ended up benefiting from the merger. So it was a win for Drip employees. It was a win for us. It was a win for the Drip founders. And ultimately, I think it's a win for the market and for Lead Pages customers as well. Yeah, in addition to that, I think it was a win for affiliates. So we raised affiliate commission from 15% to 30%. We did that immediately. And I think it was a win for Drip customers. And in addition, from the point of view of if you had less than 100 contacts, we made your plan only cost $1 a month. So there was about, you know, there was about 400 customers to 450 customers that had less than 100 contacts, and they're now only paying $1 a month as opposed to $49 a month. So I think there were a lot of wins that came out of this.
Right. And obviously, if you're adding 1,500 users per month, then you'll get that back over the long haul. Just for someone listening to this, if they're not sure what Drip is, can you give me the one paragraph explanation?
Yeah, so Drip is a marketing automation platform. You know, so it does what a MailChimp would do, but it also allows you to create advanced workflows with branching logic and lifecycle journey maps. So if you, for example, you know, want to create a flowchart outlining basically logic around what messages and what automations kick off both inside of Drip and through email and other apps based on behaviors the user is taking throughout the customer lifecycle, Drip will automate that. So, you know, I generally don't like talking about, you know, competitors, but I think sort of people might see Drip as similar to or in the same market as an Infusionsoft or a Marketo or a HubSpot. So basically tools of that ilk. It is sophisticated and advanced enough for the Fortune 100 in terms of feature set, the API, custom events, custom fields, things of that nature. But also it's simple and from a price point of view is accessible to small and medium-sized businesses who don't want to pay annual contracts, don't want to purchase through a salesperson, don't want to pay required onboarding fees, et cetera. So you know, we think we have the best of both worlds. And our goal is really to bring advanced marketing automation to companies that might not otherwise have access to that. So we think that this kind of advanced marketing automation that you might only get at a price point starting at like $200 a month with Infusionsoft or HubSpot, you know, we want to be there at that dollar price point when customers are starting out so that they can sort of grow with the platform. And then, of course, we have a sales team as well. We're going after large deals, you know, companies like GE or LeadPages customer. You know, we think there's lots of opportunity there as well. But we also want to be there when folks first start out and make this successful. So they don't have that big, painful experience when their business gets so big that they have to move off of the limited feature set that maybe a MailChimp has. They can, you know, they don't have to make that big, painful switch. They can stick with something that's fairly robust from day one.
Right. And I imagine a simple system like MailChimp is a great target market for you to pursue. They're, you know, really obvious and visible for you. And this drip is the part that comes after the opt-in. So I can see that it makes sense in the terms of the flow of your business. Do you see yourself going to the next stage in the process with things like carts?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's something that we've thought about. You know, really there's from a product perspective, companies usually start from the back end and move to the front end, or companies start with the front end and they move to the back end. And I think it's a lot harder to move from the back end to the front end. Like Oracle has tried forever to try and make a CRM, but CRMs have done a pretty good job, you know, working their way backwards. So we start off with lead generation and sort of running the points of sign up on people's websites, or, you know, allowing people to sign up for things with SMS. So lead pages allows you to do that. You can create pages, forms, landing pages. You can run split tests, things like that. And obviously the next step in the value chain was sort of like, where do leads go after someone opts in, right? And so that's where drip comes in. You know, I think that the next step for us really is center. So owning basically the customer timeline, right? So you've got all these events that are coming in for a user from webinar software, from different pages they're visiting, from things they're purchasing in Stripe, and bringing those all together in a unified customer timeline. That's what Center does and allows you to run, you know, it's basically like a next generation CRM, essentially. And so we see ourselves going kind of more back end. Perhaps, you know, we'll think about doing something with payments at some point in time, but that would really be kind of a return to the front end, you know, because most payment provide or most customers that sort of facilitate or products that facilitate payments aren't their own payment processors. Like they're using Stripe or Braintree or Authorize.net or, you know, PowerPay.biz or whatever they're using. So they're not payment providers. They're basically just like front ends on payment providers. And so, you know, being that front end, that's already kind of like what we're doing with lead pages. And so I think that it would just make more sense to extend lead pages to have that kind of functionality than it would be to build a whole new product around it. Although, you know, there's lots of things that we've been thinking about. But I see us going sort of further back or you know, extending down the back end of running your marketing stack.
Nice. So with the drip situation, did they come to you or did you go to them?
I went to them. Yeah, I basically sent them an email. I sent Rob an email, and you know, it was pretty absurd. I think the subject line was interested in selling drip ? So I was very upfront with my intentions from day one. I think I sent him the email itself was pretty short and sweet. I put a picture of it in a blog post kind of chronicling the acquisition, and the email to him basically said something to the effect of, "I love drip. Would you be interested in selling it?" And, you know, a bit over a year later, we finished the deal.
How did you meet Rob? Did you find the software first or did you meet him in a community?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I had heard Rob interviewed on Mixergy long before I had ever been interviewed on Mixergy. So Rob was an early kind of hero of mine. you know, Rob is a technical co-founder, although he has a broad skill set and can do a lot of different things, but, you know, started out as an engineer and then looked to make his own products and market them. And he runs a good podcast called Startups for the Rest of Us, and has been sort of writing and publishing on how engineers and software developers can make a living creating their own apps. So he has always had a reputation for creating solid products. And I followed Drip almost from the very beginning because I followed Rob. And it just, it had a really good reputation. The more I dug into it, I was like, wow, this API is really well written. Wow, this, you know, the automation backend is really solid. Wow, the tech stack they picked was really amazing. Wow, you know, so there was so much about what they did that, you know, it wasn't just like some marketer, you know, wanted to monetize their audience in a different way with a different kind of offering. It was like, this is a true software engineer with a really solid technical co-founder in Derek building high-end, you know, best of breed software. And I just had been following the evolution of the products. And what clinched it for me was when they came out with workflows, which I think really changed the game. There's a lot of people offering sort of linear email sequences and offering essentially sort of these drip sequences, you know, AWeber, MailChimp, et cetera. And I think there's a different class of email automation platform that offers, you know, a visual campaign builder that has sort of forks, and you can build out different actions. You can set, you know, you can set tags. You can have goals, multiple goals within the workflow. You can receive inputs from third-party integrations to find out what users have done and have not done in other marketing tools. And when that came out, I was like, wow, this is the best I've seen. This is right now my favorite email marketing app and marketing automation platform. And it's simple and it's easy to use and it's technically sound and all the things that I like to see in products. And at that point, I reached out because I was very motivated to see what we could build together.
Great. So just a few little lessons there. Podcasting, interviews, and making good products are a recipe to grab Clay's attention.
Yep.
Let's talk about you for a second.
Sure.
Now that you've got this big thing happen, what's happening with you in terms of how you're involved in the business? Is it continued to evolve? Are you getting more arms and legs separating you from the grunt work, or are you still the same Clay as last time we spoke?
Yeah. So I think I'm different in a few different ways. My wife and I recently had twins.
Well, congratulations.
So we've got twin girls. That's changed my life remarkably. And then, you know, as we continue to grow, my role changes as well. And I think I said this on the last podcast, but I feel like every 3 months my job changes. And then, you know, it takes me 3 months to realize that my job has changed. And then it takes me 3 months to relearn what my new job is, and then I'm kind of back to square, and then 3 months later it changes. So I think everyone at a fast growing startup has to reinvent themselves over and over and over again. You know, I would say what, you know, sort of my recent learning is around kind of continuing to operate in, you know, in my zone of genius and stay true to that. I think there's a lot of myths about what CEOs should be doing, what it means to be a CEO. And also other people have a lot of expectations for what a CEO should be doing. And I think that I've kind of come full circle. Like, I started out as a very market-focused person, a connoisseur of marketing technology, a lover of marketing technology. And I think there was, you know, a period of a year and a half where I had to learn how to read finances. I had to learn a basic level of competency around, you know, raising capital, certain legal things. And I think that was required. I really do. At least I think a certain base level of competency is required there without going overboard. And I think once I have that again, I'm starting to see how the founding DNA that made Lead Pages successful in the first place, I'm starting to see how that matters. So I do think that the journey I've been on is necessary. I think it would be pretty disastrous if I was still the same person that was running, you know, co-running an 8-person software startup. Like, I can't be that same person. But now that I learned those other things, I think it's time to double down on all the things that worked for us in the first place.
Right. So what do you think some of the myths are about CEOs that you would argue against?
I think the main myth is that they're sort of these detached people whose job should be to stay in some kind of office, removed from day-to-day operations, doing things like investor relations, doing things like speaking on other people's stages, doing things like, you know, creating presentations about the one-year roadmap. And I think that's really comfortable to a lot of people. It's almost safer to have that CEO because they're not likely to disrupt some of the things that are happening in the company. And I think there's a time for that. And I think probably the biggest gift that any CEO can give to their company is to hire good people and to give those people autonomy. And I think that during critical moments in a business, it's really important, you know, in the right instance for a CEO to roll up their sleeves and to, again, during specific points during the business, to get very involved, but then to pull out when they no longer need to be involved. And so, yeah, I do think that, you know, as much as sort of the myth of the, you know, sort of the seasoned, detached, professional CEO, as much as sort of that's poo-pooed on, I think there are some people that actually prefer to work with that kind of person. And those types of people probably shouldn't be working at startups.
How do you feel about lead pages now and the, you know, with the new addition? Do you think you're on track for all the stakeholders? You're doing a good job for them?
I do think so. I mean, if by stakeholders you mean,
you know, investors, basically the, you know, the people who your company owes the, you know, their value to.
Yeah, so I take a pretty broad view of stakeholders. I think that includes customers, it includes employees, and every single employee, you know, owes stock. I think it includes myself and my co-founder, and I think it includes our investors. And I absolutely feel that we're doing right by them. They've had a really good run. You know, when we received our first investment, I think we were at like 30 people, and we had like maybe 7,000 or 8,000 customers. And now we're sort of, you know, about to hit 44,000 customers and growing by a, you know, sort of a similar pace as when, you know, we were half the size. So we're growing at a really nice clip, and our growth is sort of recently reaccelerated, which is really, really nice to see. So I feel really good about the value that our investors have received, and I also feel really good about the opportunity for wealth creation that our employees get to participate in, and I also feel really good about the product itself. You know, the price for lead pages has stayed the same almost since the beginning, and we continue to add a lot more to the product over time. So I feel really good about how we're treating our stakeholders on all fronts.
Nice. Okay, so just in closing, Clay, if someone's listening to this, they're considering taking on another person's business division, what would be three things that you would encourage them to investigate or do their full diligence on that you did that you think was critical in your decision to take on Drip?
Yeah. So, you know, we weren't looking for an asset acquisition. We were looking to partner with founders that had a vision and to, you know, provide resources to allow them to scale what they were already doing. So I'd say that's thing number one is like respect the founders and find founders and people that want to continue what they're doing and who you can maybe, you know, add more fuel to the fire. I think that's thing number one. I think thing number two is to find truly, truly good products created by people who love product. There's a lot of artificially inflated valuations around companies that maybe have really good marketers but don't have a really solid product. And we wanted to find a fast-growing product, which Drip was one of the fastest-growing SaaS companies in the country. So it was already growing fast, but it was growing fast because of the product, not despite it, right? So there's a lot of companies that I think are growing fast because they have good marketing. They're growing fast in spite of their product. Drip had good marketing and a good product and some things we could scale there. So I'd say, you know, thing number one, find founders who still have energy around their vision that, you know, where you can help scale what they're already doing. Second thing, find products where the product itself is the primary growth lever, not a bunch of fancy marketing tricks. And I'd say maybe the third thing is to don't disrupt the special sauce. So the Drip team at Lead Pages sits at a table together. They all report into their CEO. We didn't sort of break them up where the engineers now report to our engineering team and their product folks report to our product folks and their support people report to our support people. They're staying together as a cohesive unit. We figured it worked before. Let's not destroy the value that we just paid for by disrupting existing patterns. Let's just actually sort of scale the things that were already working in that business. So I'd say the third thing is, if it's not broken, don't fix it. There's probably a reason why you're interested in the company in the first place. So just try and scale that rather than trying to assimilate it into some other thing.
That's good advice. It's kind of like what Woody Allen does with actors. He hires them, and when they say, oh, how do you want me to play this? He goes, listen, I've hired you. You're the actor. Act. And he just gets out of their way.
Nice.
It's a lot like how I run the team. It's like, listen, do what you think is going to be the best. Put your own skills and I think that probably takes a lot of discipline from you to hold back from wanting to overly integrate it or influence it, because you learnt all these things so far. But you know, I see they've got their own site. It looks like their own brand and look and feel and everything. So be interesting to watch this and see how it pans out.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just sort of the luxury you get when you work with A players is, you know, they're A players. And I think that B players performance suffers without guidance. And I think A players tend to do better if not interfered with. And that's really our aim here. And when you're working with people that are operating at this level, I think it's best to just stand to the side and watch the magic happen.
Awesome. Clay, thanks for coming along and sharing. And I hope you'll continue to give us these sort of updates as the business evolves. I love watching this journey from under the staircase through to, you know, global CEO, corporate mogul, sales team selling to GE. What an exciting transition. I get the feeling you're not even close to finished yet. You're at the foothills of Mount Everest with plenty more journey left.
You know, I recently have been listening to this book about Steve Jobs. And I don't fashion myself after Steve Jobs. I just think it's a really good book. It's called Becoming Steve Jobs. And it really outlines a journey that Steve started on right after college and that continued. I mean, he was really doing his best work when I believe he was in his 50s, right? When he died. And so these journeys, I think, span multiple decades. And in Steve's case, it was with the same company. And then if you look at Ed Catmull, who ran Pixar, with Steve, you know, he started doing motion graphics when he was in college, and it wasn't until he was like 45, 50 that he got to do what he originally set out to do in the first place, which was create a motion picture, which was Toy Story with a computer. And then he continues to do what he did at Pixar. And so I think that all the things that are worth doing merit a multi-decade trajectory, often with the same company. And I, for whatever reason, like, it's really at that level that I love marketing technology and I love the problems that we're solving. And so, you know, hopefully we'll be doing these interviews decades from now and we'll have a much larger story to tell.
Yeah, let's keep doing that. Thank you, Clay.
Thanks, James.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.